how to build passive income through real estate investing. Our guest today on the show has made it his mission to make sure that he can teach others how to do exactly that through commercial real estate investing. He's got a long career in doing this, and well, he beats me by a number of years becoming an entrepreneur. Starting out in his 20s, he was bartending and then threw his hat into real estate investing at 20 years old. And since then, he's now done over $150 million worth of real estate deals and transactions. And now he teaches other people how to do that as well. He's got a great podcast. He's got actually two podcasts, the Investing for Cashflow podcast, as well as the Mobile Home Investing podcast. And he's made a career in commercial real estate. My guest, he's been here on the show a couple of years ago. So I want to welcome back Kevin Bupp back to the program. Nice to have you back, my friend.
Thanks for having me back, Clayton. Very much looking forward to catching up with you.
Absolutely. So I want to hear, what have you been doing in the past few years? I mean, we've been dealing with the middle of this pandemic. We've been dealing with a lot of, you know, I want to hear like what you've been up to over the past few years. We've been dealing with a lot of ups and downs in the real estate world over the past, you know, over the past year. It's been surprisingly good for real estate investors. And I keep seeing these home values. I keep seeing home prices. I've been seeing the commercial real estate space, though, has been getting battered in different ways. But you just launched, what, your third new fund so people can start investing with you? Tell me how things have been going over the past, 12 to 24 months for you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And yeah, we've been busy. I think it's probably been slightly over 2 years since I was on the show last. And, starting back in 2012, we diverted our focus from multifamily and single family properties. And we had, a mixture of commercial assets, but really shifted our focus into mobile home parks. I got battered and bruised through 2008, had some challenges with my assets down here in Florida, and really made a complete shift in 2012 and started buying parks. Bought the first one, then thereafter bought second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, what have you. And, today we've got 19 communities throughout 11 different states. We're always, we're more long-term investors. We like to buy in markets that we intend to own in for, 10 plus years. However, just like a lot of investors, our portfolio has gone through evolutionary stages where, an asset that might have made sense to us 3 years ago, we've decided to sell. And so the past 2 years, we've sold a few properties, sold a few of our mobile home parks, and then we bought a great deal of mobile home parks as well. As far as the last 12 months, it's been kind of interesting to say the least. As we closed out the end of 2019, we also closed out our second mobile home park fund with the intent of rolling out the third fund the end of Q1 of 2020. And we all know what happened back in March of 2020. And so the launch of that fund, which just launched about a month ago, it got delayed a great deal as we entered into this pandemic and really, took the time to absorb what was happening and to really get a sense of clarity as to, how this might play out and how it might ultimately affect real estate. Thinking back, Clayton, to, March and April, those 2 months, and really it was April. It's kind of March leading into April. Everyone was wondering, anyone that had any type of rental real estate, they were wondering, are my tenants going to pay come April? And then in April,
right,
leading into May, everyone's wondering, are my tenants going to pay in May? And, the same thing, carried forward. And then the stimulus packages got kicked out. Folks had some money, what have you. And what we realized in rental real estate is that so long as you're in residential rental real estate and you weren't in, some of the hardest hit cities, such as like New York City or San Francisco or LA, what have you, we've done, generally speaking, quite fine. Things have been good. Things haven't been perfect, but they've been very good, especially in comparison to, unfortunately, those folks that are in the hospitality industry that, that own hotels, that own event centers, even retail, office. I think office is a little bit of a delayed bloodbath, but I think that ultimately is going to see a lot of pain in the coming years as employers decide that they're not going to renew maybe the entirety of their lease space, maybe a portion of it, or maybe none of it, right? And so, but we've been busy. We've been busy, and we're just ramping back up our acquisitions now. We closed own a couple of assets here over the last month, and got another closing here before the end of the year. So we're trying to stay pretty busy over here.
That's great. So you say over here, specifically, what markets are you looking at right now? Is it in your backyard? Is that where you're most comfortable in your acquisitions? And take me through the process of your acquisitions right now. What criteria are you looking at when you pull the trigger?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll answer the first question about the markets. And I wish I could say that we owned everything in our backyard. However, you know, in the mobile home park space, you know, it's very different than that of traditional multifamily, in that there's a limited supply of mobile home parks in the U.S. The number, you know, hovers up somewhere in the 50,000 range. You know, there's a total of 50,000 mobile home parks throughout the U.S. Of those 50,000, approximately half are of a size in a market that we might consider buying in, right? So we're like, we're really vowing for that 25,000. And that means that we've got to expand our reach outside of just our backyard. Now, I do live in Florida, and Florida is, I think, second to California in the total number of mobile home parks that exist within the state. So it's like number two to California. But, again, in order for us to build a portfolio, we've got to be willing to expand and go out of our backyard. And so at this present time, we own assets in the Southeast. I love the Southeast, right? The migratory patterns, folks are moving away from the cold states. Lots of companies are moving their way to the Sun Belt and to the Southeastern states. And so we love the Southeast. And so we own in Florida. We also own in Georgia, the Carolinas. And then up in the Northeast, we do have some assets. There's a few states where we currently own that we probably will start moving away from. We do own in Michigan. We love Michigan. We own assets in New York. New York has treated us well up until, you know, very recently. It's just not a very business-friendly state to do or conduct business in. And so more than likely, we're not going to be buying more assets up in New York. And then we've got stuff out in the Midwest as well. So 11 different states at present time. And so I had to get very comfortable buying outside my backyard back in 2012. That's when I bought that first mobile home park. Prior to that, everything was, I wouldn't say backyard, but it was within 2.5 hours, 3 hours at most. Everything I owned prior to 2012, prior to getting into mobile home parks. And so today I'm very comfortable with properties out of state. In fact, I've come to find that there's actually some benefits buying properties outside of your backyard, especially if you're, if you're just getting started. And, you know, what I see a lot of investors, the mistake I see a lot of investors make when they're buying in their backyard is they feel that they have to be present all the time. They don't put the necessary steps in place that, number one, find the right property management company and put the communication pieces in place to have that professional relationship and let them do their job. They feel the need to be by that property all the time. And then at that point, what I've determined that you just bought yourself a job. You didn't buy an investment, you bought yourself a job. And so being far away from the asset, it forces you to create those efficiencies.
That's a great way. I've done hundreds of episodes. I've never heard anyone say it with such clarity in that way before, that this idea, I mean, I just don't encourage people to buy in their own backyard. I often say, you know, the best properties are probably not going to be in your backyard unless you meet these certain demographic criteria, right? You might get lucky, you know, but you're probably not. And so I love that point that it's almost like you're going to kind of take a slightly lazier approach because it's in your backyard. You can drive by the property. You're not going to put the proper property management pieces in place, the software, the other things, because I can just drive over there. So that's a great way to look at it. I've never heard anyone say that. Mark that down.
You know, one of the things we do, it's so simple, but one of the things that we started doing many years back, and I'm not going to act like I came up with this idea myself. I saw someone else utilizing the technology and we adopted fairly quickly. But, you know, being that we own properties in 11 states, a lot of times it doesn't even make sense to physically go visit our properties every quarter. Now, if it's a property we just purchased and it's in a turnaround stage and we're doing a lot of construction projects, we're there on site quite often. But once it's, you know, once we've kind of executed on that business plan and it's deemed to be stabilized in our eyes, you know, we still want to visit that property on a regular basis. However, it's somewhat prohibitive, cost-wise and even time-wise to be traveling to 11 different states, all these different properties, scooting around, you know, even once a quarter. And so what we do in each one of the communities, we have an on-site manager, someone that either lives in the community and handles the day-to-day, or they live outside of the community, but they have an office that they come into to kind of handle rent collections, deposits, tenant notices, what have you. Again, just the day-to-day boots and ground operations. But we arm them with a GoPro camera and a suction mount for their vehicle. And we have very precise instructions on which direction to drive through that community. And they have to do that once a month. So they literally put that camera in their car, they drive through the community based on our map that we provided them, and they upload it to our, you know, our team Dropbox account, and our district manager will review those videos each and every week to ensure that rules are being enforced and that the community looks good, right? That it's basically, you know, the residents are abiding by the rules and regulations set forth. And so that allows us to get eyes on the property and, you know, it gets to about 90% of the way there to what we might see if we were actually in person. It's not 100%, but it's pretty darn close. And if we ever feel that, you know, we might not be getting the real picture, right? Sometimes it's easy to angle a camera, you know, 10 degrees that way and maybe not see what's right. going on over here. Everyone's got a smartphone nowadays. And so we'll simply get on, there's a bunch of different forums out there, or, you know, Craigslist gigs, or, I mean, again, there's many different ways you can find these folks, but find a college kid or someone that's looking for an extra $50, pay them $50, give them some instructions and go have them drive through that community with their smartphone, take a camera, send it via Dropbox or Google Drive. And then we can truly see what we might have been missing. So
yeah, pretty straightforward. That's brilliant. There's a bunch of different websites that popped up over the past few years, like go find me or go for me or something like that. Like these little gigs. We did that with some raw land in North Carolina mm-hmm. and just had the guys drive out to these spots and get a good video. And we're going to pull the trigger on buying this land. And it's you can do that for very, very inexpensive. And now heck with drones too, you know, use a drone shot to fly over and get stuff too. I would imagine.
Yeah, that's it. In fact, we don't even, you know, we typically, even when we have a property in contract to buy, you know, there's only so much you can do from Google Earth, right? And a lot of the Google Earth imagery, depending on where the property is located, it's aged, and a lot can happen in a year from when Google Earth, where they did a drive through a year ago to today, to present time. And so a lot of times we'll chalk it up to pursuit costs, and we'll literally spend, you know, we'll get a property tied up. But before we fly there, we will literally go ahead and engage someone to not just do a drive through, but actually we'll spend, you know, $300-$400 to get some drone footage as well. Because again, what you might see from the street might be very different from what you see up above. And once you take into account the surrounding neighborhood and condition that it's in and proximity to other key elements within that marketplace. And so we'll go ahead and get those items done, like literally right out of the gate, right when we enter due diligence on the property. That way, when we go there in person, we know what to expect. And there's been a couple times where we were able to kill a deal and be like, this is very night and day different than your marketing package and what I see on Google Earth. Very wow. 9-day difference, and I don't think we have an interest. And so we're going to move on. And it saves face for us because we kill the deal right away. That's not our objective, but we want to make sure that we don't waste anyone's time. We kill the deal before we spend more money and before we drag it on with the broker or the seller that's involved.
So obviously, you know, you and I come from different worlds a little bit. I mean, I'm in the residential space, so we do, you know, single families and duplexes. You're in the commercial space, so you're looking at different metrics and numbers. And you and I talked to that. You were kind enough to have me on your show. And I said, you know, commercial real estate is an art form, you know, and you're in a world where I think it is a lot different than what we do. And there's a lot going on there with numbers and understanding evaluations of properties, and especially on a mobile home. This is a whole other world for me. So I want to treat me like I'm a 5-year-old and explain to me what exactly are you looking for? And, you know, also give me some examples of what, when you're looking at these videos that you're saying, oh, that's the deal breaker, we're done. And you call John over, your friend John, you say, John, look, there's another one of these with that problem. You know, what are to you these little things that stand out that you're just saying, we're going to walk away from a deal like that?
Okay, I'll try not to get too granular because we could probably fall off the rails pretty quickly. But I'll give one example as it pertains to mobile home parks. What might scare us away? Now, one of the big benefits of mobile home parks is the majority of the homes they're actually owned by the tenant, so they rent the dirt from us, so they rent the lot from us. And so, in a typical situation, our responsibility as the owners of that community is basically to keep the common grounds nice and to maintain the infrastructure. Infrastructure meaning the water and the sewer lines, the roads, clubhouse, whatever might be there. And the homes themselves, the mobile homes, anything that might happen to that home itself, so the roof goes bad, the AC, the plumbing, or any of that, is a responsibility of the tenant. that's a beautiful thing. You know, you find folks that have pride of ownership. You know, they have a lot to lose if they don't pay their lot rent. They'll basically have the chance of losing the most valuable asset they own, which is their home. Even if it only is a $20,000 or $30,000 mobile home, it's either that or somehow come up with your $350 or $400 lot rent, right? And so a lot of times you'll find they'll do anything. They're in a corner. They'll find a way to pay that lot rent because they have so much to lose if they don't. Very different than like in an apartment. If they can't pay that rent, guess what? They pack up and move to another apartment. There's a million of them out there. Many that won't even do a background check. They'll be able to get in just fine. So not too much to lose there. And so back to the point, you know, one of the things that we deem to be at risk is they own the home, but if that home, if it's a mobile home park that is just, I'm talking, it's worn out and it's tired and it's been, you know, run by a slumlord for the last couple of decades, which you come across, you know, sometimes on a regular basis to where, yes, all the homes are owned by the residents. However, all the homes that are in this community, they are worn out and tired as well. They're all 30, 40 year old homes. They haven't been maintained. You know, they're in really poor condition. And the risk that I see there when the majority or a large portion of the homes haven't been maintained, it means that that tenant now doesn't have much to lose. You know, when times get tough and they live in a mobile home that's worth $500 and literally the roof's already been leaking for a couple of years and the thing needs a ton of work and it's very unsightly, they literally have nothing to lose at that point in time. So there's not much leverage on our part when we get in, when we buy the community. If they fall delinquent in their rent and we try to push our hand, it might just be easier for them just to get up and go and abandon that home. Now we've got this old, junky, abandoned home on our property. It's going to cost us a couple $1,000 to get rid of it. But not only that, we just lost the revenue. And it's going to cost us a great deal of money to get revenue back coming from that lot again, because that means we've got to probably bring a home in, go through the sales process and what have you. So it could be a very expensive endeavor if we have multiple residents to get up and leave. So that's just one example of what we might see from a drone aerial or a drive-through prior to buying a property that might scare us away.
Now, everyone wants to keep their home and their family safe, whether it's from a break-in, a fire, flooding, or a medical emergency. Simply Safe Home Security delivers award-winning 24/7 protection, and listeners of my show are going to get a free home security camera. That's right, and a 60-day risk-free trial. I'll tell you more about it in just a second. But Simply Safe, you don't just get an arsenal of cameras and sensors and say, hey, here you go, you're on your own. No, you get the best professional monitors in the business. They've got your back day and night, ready to send the police, fire, EMTs when you need them the most, straight to your front door. We were traveling overseas about a year ago, and what happened was we got an alert in the middle of the night because our sliding glass door wasn't fully closed. We had someone who was like a pest control person who'd come to the house, and we were away. Guess what? And it slid open, and the police officer showed up, and we got an alert right on the Simply Safe app. We got a phone call while we were overseas, taken care of. And you can set this up by yourself in about 30 minutes. It's super easy. Then Simply Safe's professionals take over. They monitor your home 24/7, ready to send help the moment there's an alarm. Plus, there's no long-term contract, no hidden fees, no installation costs. And you will get a free home security camera when you purchase a Simply Safe system by going to simplysafe.com/investing. You're also going to get a 60-day risk-free trial, so there's nothing to lose. Visit simplysafe.com/investing for your free security camera today. That's simplysafe.com/investing. Is it safe to say then, Kevin, that you, when I talk to a lot of commercial real estate developers, they want to see how they can add value, right? Because that's where the value is in this property for you as a commercial investor. And you're hoping that it hasn't been overdone already. Like, You're buying a 100-unit apartment complex, and if they've already added value by adding a common space, they added a community pool, they've added the gymnasium, they've added walkways for dog walking, and so, and then you come in and there's very little for you to do to add additional value to increase rents, separate meters, et cetera. But you also don't want to be on the other side of it where it's just way too much value that you're going to have to add. So maybe somewhere in the middle, like to be a happy medium.
Yeah, well, I think it depends what type of investor you are. I mean, there's investors where, you know, those scenarios you just gave, both of them are a great fit for their business model. And so, you know, our business model is a little mixed. But, you know, back when we got started, you know, I went through a tough time to where I lost most everything I had following 2008. And so the first property I bought there after that crash was my first mobile home park. I still own it today. It was a very heavy value add property. I mean, it was practically vacant. It was in horrible shape, had squatters in it. I mean, it had been REO for a couple of years. And so it went through the motions and it just was, it was less than desirable, but there was a ton of upside, a lot of very difficult upside. But at that point, I needed to hit a home run. I needed to make the money I had, the little money I had left, I needed to knock it out of the park, grand slam. And we did. And so the challenge with doing very heavy value add projects like that as we grew the company was they suck up so much bandwidth. And there's only so many, I don't care what your team looks like, there's only so many of those you can do at one time, especially when they're spread amongst different, you know, states or different markets. The challenge associated with finding contractors, to do the renovations and to deal with the different municipalities. And I mean, it's just, the list goes on and on. And so nowadays our business looks very different. We still do value add projects, but I'd probably categorize them as light to medium value add. And then on the flip side of that, we also buy already stabilized properties, depending on the market that they're in. So with our fund structure, it allows us to be diverse and actually blend the two together. So we can hit a couple of doubles and triples and then find a property that's already stabilized, phenomenal market. It's going to continue to see NOI growth due to rent growth, but there's not a ton of value there. But that property is in such a phenomenal market and it's got a phenomenal tenant base, collections, what have you. It's okay. It's a coupon clipper. We're going to keep it for the next, you know, couple of decades and keep chugging along. So we do a little bit of both now.
So when you pick up one of these new properties, let's say, maybe give both examples here, one that you're going to have to do some value add, one that you, it's already stabilized. Are there already property management teams in place that have been there working, or you bringing in sort of your own team, your own infrastructure, and taking that over to manage these properties?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, it's probably one of the, I guess you could see it's one of the big downsides, or it could be looked at as a positive as well. But I deem it to be a potential downside of this business. And it's kind of this specific to mobile home parks, but there are very few professional property management companies across the U.S. that specialize in mobile home parks. Now you might find it in a few markets, such as like a Florida, where there's a very large concentration, or a California, or maybe in Arizona. There's probably more than normal, but across the country, we cannot rely. There's not literally probably 80% of the markets that we own communities in today, and these aren't just tertiary markets out in the middle of nowhere. There's not a good viable third-party property management option. So we, you know, being in the space, if you want to grow, if you want to own more than one mobile home park or two, and you actually want to build a business out of it, you pretty much have to succumb to the fact that you're going to also have to build out a property management infrastructure, a vertical property management infrastructure, which is what we have. So now whenever we go into a property, most of the time, the property, if there's a challenge with it, it's mostly due to either a local property management company that was never, you know, suited to run a mobile home park, you know, operating it. Maybe their best abilities, but it's normally very inferior. Or, you know, the current owner, his little property management team doing a poor job at it. And so we normally go in, and that's normally one of the big problems that we've got to fix, is actually putting the right pieces of the puzzle in place, the right systems and processes, you know, enforcing collections, what have you. And that all happens from our property management group.
I'm curious on the cash flow piece, obviously, real estate investing for cash flow, a big portion of what you teach, and so do I on the passive income side. You know, I've had as we've reevaluated, you talked about this at the beginning a little bit, sort of reevaluating some of your assets and things change and you shift things around. You know, we've been looking sort of internally just from a personal portfolio perspective on the idea of more of like wealth preservation. Cash flow, of course, an important piece of this, but boy, it's been turbulent, right? You see paper assets in the stock market going up and down. Everyone gets excited about Airbnb's IPO, which I can't wrap my head around at the moment, but you know, up and down, it's crazy, right? And you see Disney laying off 32,000 people in areas where you thought, wow, it's a bulletproof market, you know? And so there's a lot of change happening right now. When you look at these assets for you and your family or for your business, are you zeroing in on the cash flow, or are you looking at this in some ways more of like wealth preservation, almost like buying gold, real estate, gold, silver for 4,000 years have sustained us?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both, a little bit of both. And the reason being is that obviously we buy for cash flow. I mean, we're not going to buy an asset on a speculative nature that doesn't have the ability to produce cash flow, a return on our investment. We're not going to buy a mobile home park because it has a potential future higher and better use as a redevelopment play. That's just not really our business model. And so, we are buying for cash flow. However, I also think that in that same line, we're also buying for wealth preservation, because here's the thing. Mobile home parks are the only asset class that have a diminishing supply. So there's more mobile home parks that get either shut down or redeveloped every year than that are brought online. Last year, meaning 2019, there was approximately five new mobile home parks built. And those mobile home parks typically are very high-end communities, more lifestyle communities that have palm tree lined streets, activities directors, swimming pools. I mean, it might be in like an Arizona or Florida, not really affordable housing at all. Again, more of a lifestyle choice than anything else, probably for snowbirds. And so back to the wealth preservation side of it, they're not building any more of these. And so you've got a really, you got a big supply demand imbalance here, which works to our favor. And we also have a big supply demand imbalance of affordable housing, quality affordable housing in this country. And so mobile home parks, I feel, represent the best affordable housing option in the marketplace when compared to traditional multifamily properties that renters would typically, that's kind of our competition, C and B class apartments or a mobile home park. And if you can't, you can take any mobile home park we own in the country, any one of the markets, doesn't matter, you can pick one. There is no cheaper option to live than in either that mobile home park or one of the other mobile home parks in that particular market. And that doesn't mean that it's not as nice as a B-class apartment complex. The average rent on a mobile home park across the country, some markets higher, some markets lower, but the average is right around $400 a month. And that would be, three bedroom, two bath home. There is no place in a reasonable, safe market that a family of, four could live for $400 a month. And so if you can't afford that, then your next option literally is, it's on your friend's couch or underneath the bridge. Joking with that, but that's kind of the truth, right?
Right.
And so I think that that allows us to really, play into that wealth preservation. We buy these mobile home parks in great markets and, great school districts, areas that have a high demand for affordable housing. That demand is going to be there today, tomorrow, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. And so I think it's really a long-term play in this asset class.
I mean, we have such an affordable housing crisis in this country. It's not even close to being fulfilled. It's going to subside in the next 15 years. We just can't build them quickly enough. And so when you've got an asset class like mobile home park investing that's dwindling, they're not building them anymore and they're closing
that's
down. That's fantastic. Talk to me a little bit. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, then you got municipalities. It's interesting how politics play into this, because you got municipalities that they cry they want affordable housing. Everyone wants it, right? All the politicians want it, but when it really comes to their city, when it comes to the city officials to make a decision when a developer comes to them that wants to build affordable housing, it just doesn't happen.
Right.
They say they want it, but they really don't want it in their backyard. Right. It's kind of, not my backyard.
Center, and we've seen it with these opportunity zones, right? Everyone touting the opportunity zones, but really it's the high end condos that get built in the opportunity zones. Oh, we're building affordable housing. Yeah, sure you are. Maybe a piece of that, but it's not like we think it is, or it's being advertised. Talk to me about the cash flow piece of this. My audience probably hears me talk all the time about, like, when we were building our new construction, single families and duplexes, our goal right now, is like a minimum sort of like a net cash flow of about 8% net return. And then it goes up from there, depending on if it's a duplex, single family, and of course, variables there. So, I want to hit somewhere in that range, that 8 at a minimum, if I can. On the mobile home park side, I have no frame of reference for this. So again, educate me on what are you looking for that you can add value and it's not cutting into your cash flow and you're still able to get that good NOI.
Yeah. And again, it depends on what type of properties you're buying. If you're buying the more value add property, once you stabilize that, hopefully you get rewarded more for your efforts.
Right.
Once it becomes a stabilized property. Whereas if you're just right out of the gate buying a stabilized property where there's, it's just a plug and play, your returns might be lower, as your risk might be lower as well. Right. And so, just generally speaking, I could speak to our fund because we kind of blend the two together, and that can kind of give you some historical figures of what we've done in the past. But for this particular fund, the type of assets that we're buying, again, we're kind of blending those stable properties with some value add as well. We're looking for returns as far as like the internal rate of returns on the investment over the life of that investment, the life, we call it 10 years. Like that's typically, you know, the period of time that we intend to hold these 7 to 10 years is going to be somewhere in the 16 to 18% range. Again, it's going to vary from property to property. The cash on cash return, you know, on a stable property, it might be higher initially than that of a value add, but that value add, if we stabilize it, typically we're looking to get into double digit cash on cash returns within, you know, the first 2 years. So historically, you know, we've been able to accomplish, again, I don't like to even say historically, because we know the times have changed. I mean, you can't reflect back and say, well, I did this in 2015 and expect that that's going to happen today, right?
Right.
These times are very different. Real estate's a very different price than what it was then. But, you know, we've recently gone full cycle into full assets. A few assets that we bought within the last 3 years, took us about 2 years to really stabilize them. And then ultimately, you know, used the last year to really appreciate the efforts that we put in, and then exited out of those properties for various reasons. But across the board, we've averaged somewhere around like a 22 to 24% internal rate of return. Again, is that doable again and again and again? Probably not so much as, you know, if prices continue to go up, but there's definitely opportunity in our space. There's lots of mom and pop still in the space that just haven't maximized the value of that asset that they've owned for decades and decades and decades. And that's what makes it so attractive to us. We know that we can still go find opportunities from operators and owners that have just owned it for a long time. Either they haven't put the capital back into it that's necessary, or they haven't kept up with market rents, or they've just left it go downhill. They never should have been a landlord in the first place, right? They just don't do a good job of running a business. And we can go in and very easily fix those challenges and make a lot of money doing so.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing, you know, buying somebody's website that they haven't managed properly. They haven't optimized it. They haven't put the proper ads on the website, you know, to drive the revenue. They haven't optimized the SEO. There's all these things that happens across all kinds of businesses to be able to take things to the next level. You know, and people might be saying, wow, that kind of rate of return, you know, that Clayton and Kevin are talking about here, is that possible? It is. And then you can take into account, there's so many variables and things that go into that, right? You could have upwards of double digit returns when you take into account the tax benefits, when you're factoring in all of those additional things. That's how you get these incredible returns on these investments. So talk to me about your fund here, and what are the criteria? What does the criteria look like for someone who might be listening, who might want to, you know, start investing in mobile home parks, doesn't want to go out and buy them themselves, go through all of the scaling that you guys have done to try to do that, but wants to invest in that type of an asset class? What do you require of them?
Yeah, so it's a Reg D 506C offering, so it's only open to accredited investors. The minimum investment amount is $100,000, and then we have different tiers, based on preferred return, tied to how much capital is put in by the limited partner. So, but it's a 70-30 split, 70% to the limited partner, 30% to our general partnership team, and then there's other waterfall tiers in there based on, again, how much capital contribution is given by the limited partner. So we just launched it literally about a month and a half ago. We bought the very first asset right after we launched it, just closing the second one about a week ago, and then we got a third one closing here at the end of the year. And then it's a $25 million fund, so you know, we project that sometime in the next 18 months that, you know, we'll be able to acquire somewhere between $60 and $75 million of both mobile home parks. And then this is a blended fund, so it's a little different than our other two funds. One of the other asset classes that we've grown very fond of are surface parking lots in either downtown central business districts or very high population tourism areas. And so one of the assets that we just recently closed on was a surface parking lot in downtown Wilmington, North Carolina. So again, it'll be a blended fund between the two, with the emphasis being on mobile home parks.
Fascinating. So yeah, it's a good diversification there. People need to park and people need to live. We need affordable housing more than ever. Fascinating. So I'm just curious, before we go, when you're looking at acquiring one of these mobile home parks, I'm sure that the price range is varied across. How many units typically in a typical mobile home park? And then how much are you typically paying for? What's a good price range to acquire a mobile home park?
Yeah, it's all built on cash flow, so it's really hard to, you know, to say like a price per unit, because, you know, looking at a 100 space park that might have $200 lot rents to a 100 space park that has $400 lot rents, mm-hmm. it's really the value is going to be driven on the underlying NOI, the net operating income that's there. And so, but generally speaking, I'd say what we look for is our average price point falls somewhere in the $2.5 to $3 million to $5 million range. So let's say $3 to $5 million range is our typical deal size. And then the minimum size mobile home park that we'll really consider today, we'll consider as small as like 80 lots, but really like 100 plus is really the size that works best for us scaling our business and generating enough. It's more tied to being able to generate enough revenue from that asset to be able to hire a good quality on-site manager, be able to pay a realistic salary to get a quality person that can oversee the day-to-day on that asset. And with smaller properties, if they're located out of state, you're not going to be able to generate enough additional revenue to be able to hire that person on site that's probably going to have the brains to be able to run your property efficiently. So we've come to learn that 80 spaces is really that threshold that works well for us.
Interesting. Well, if someone's watching right now, listening right now, wants to get started in real estate investing and, you know, thinking that this moving into that mobile home space is the way to go for them, that they find that attractive, they like that asset class, what sort of advice would you have to a newbie who wants to get started and not get the shiny object syndrome, but just focus?
Yeah. I mean, again, whether it's mobile home park investing or, you know, any other type of real estate at that, I mean, back when I got started, I hate saying that because I sound like I'm really, really old. I'm not too old. I'm 41.
We're getting old.
But anyway, I've got grays coming. I feel like more have coming this year than any other years past. But back then, when I found my way into the space, you had to literally, you could buy like home study courses. Back then it was, you know, CDs or whatever. And you couldn't just go get free education, or, you know, YouTube wasn't around and, you know, iTunes wasn't around. But you can pretty much find a ton of information on whatever asset class you have an interest in, including mobile home parks. I've got a free podcast on mobile home park investing. There's a few other good ones out there, and there's just a ton of good free information. So I would suggest that take advantage of the free information to at least stick your toe in the water. Again, whether it's mobile home parks or, you know, what it is you do, Clayton, or anything, any other type of real estate investment, stick your toe in the water with the free education. Once you've really found something that garnered your attention, then dive a little deeper, you know, see if you can align yourself with others that are actually out there doing it. You know, the other operators of mobile home parks that are successfully investing, you can find them in different forums or even local to you. You know, do some research on the public data, find out who owns the mobile home parks that are, you know, in and around where you live, and go take them to coffee and get to learn their business. And that would be my suggestion. But I think you can learn so much for free nowadays. I wouldn't say that you can go as far as learning enough for free to become someone that's got a $1 billion net worth. But I think that you can really get a huge head start and actually more efficiently spend your money when it comes time to actually pay for that guidance, right? You'll know the right questions to ask. Right. You'll know, just topics that are going to be a waste of time and even how to maybe filter out the good potential operators from the bad operators that you want to align yourselves with, right? So you can learn a lot for free.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, so much great information in the real estate space out there for free, whether it's from your mobile home podcast or your cash flow podcast, YouTube, it's all there. And just test it out. Try it. Try it before you buy it, you know, and that's great advice. Well, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to dive in and talk about cash flow and passive income through mobile home park investing and commercial investing. Kevin, how can people connect with you, learn more about the fund, or just take a listen to one of your shows?
Yeah. So if they want to learn more about the fund and you know, what we've got going on the company side of things, they can go to investwithsunrise.com. Again, that's investwithsunrise.com. And then as far as me personally, you know, I also host my podcast there as well, but you can learn about me and my background and, you know, just the personal things I have an interest in. You can go to my personal website, which is kevinbupp.com. So awesome. Between those two, you can track me down. No problem.
It's easy to find. The internet makes it easy these days. Kevin, great pleasure getting to hang out with you again this afternoon. Don't be a stranger. It's been a couple of years. So good. I'm glad to hear everything's been going well for you in this crazy, crazy time. Much love to you and your family.
Thanks, Clayton. Much appreciated.
Thank you. And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing and making this a part of your commute. your time spent on the couch, your time working out, whatever it happens to be. Now go out there, take action, become a real estate investor. I still believe it's the number one way to build wealth. We'll see you next time, everyone.